Thanks so much. I'm a teacher, so I have a handout. So if you can dig out, because it's not nearly as cool as Bill's handout, but it's functional. So it's the one that says an international perspective on the science of team science with my name at the top. So if you could please dig that out, and that'll also save you taking some notes. It's a great pleasure to be here with you today because it represents an evolutionary step of two sorts. I remember being in Bethesda in 2006, very excited about what was being created at the time. It also represents our meeting today here, an evolutionary step in thinking about interdisciplinarity, because something is going on, and it's very exciting to think about where science of team science fits with that. I also want to bring an international perspective on that by sharing thoughts about team science in Europe, in particular transdisciplinary movements. And it was easier to get here from Detroit than flying around the world to share this perspective with you. So when interdisciplinarity first arose, Steve and I are having fun thinking about the original date. There are people who claim the word was first used in the 1920s. And in fact, Roberta Frank says that it was first used in the early 20s at the corner of 42nd and Madison, which is where the Social Science Research Council was formed. But it came to popular parlance more in the 1970s. In 1970, in particular, when this organization you see here, the OECD, hosted the first international conference on interdisciplinarity. And the kind of definition that was there is enshrined in the 2004 report from the National Academies on facilitating interdisciplinary research, which has become like the new benchmark of definition. Well, when the term was first defined, IDR here in the upper, your upper left, it meant teams or individuals who were integrating information or data, methods, techniques, tools from different bodies of knowledge, and for a variety of reasons, not only to advance basic understanding, but address complex questions and solve problems. At the time, transdisciplinarity was defined as, you'll see this in your handout, the first one, the original definition for the OECD, number one here, it was defined as a common system of axioms. There was a sense that something more was needed than integrating what already exists in the way of knowledge, tools, methods, etc. And what this has become associated with most prominently over the decades since 1970 is the rise of new theories and paradigms that transcend separate disciplinary perspectives. So you see a list here of some of the most well-known ones, including feminism, feminist theory, structuralism, sociobiology, general systems theory. But something started to change in the late 1980s and 1990s that leads us to where we are today, and I think a very important cross-oceanic link that we need to think about as we build the research agenda to find out what's happening elsewhere. You see, of course, here the science of team science. We're quite familiar with what this movement is doing, and Dan alluded earlier to the 2006 meeting in Bethesda. What's striking about the science of team science is it represents an attempt to go beyond older paradigms of interdisciplinarity and create new transcendent, that's the term that's used, transcendent interdisciplinary research that generates new methodological and theoretical frameworks. Now, in this particular case, it's human health and well-being, and a variety of stakeholder groups are involved. But it's not the same sense of stakeholder group involvement in research as what you see on the far right, the evolution of TDNet, which is Transdisciplinarity Net. It's an exchange network. It's the largest international multilingual group dedicated to transdisciplinary research, including collaborative, in fact, primarily collaborative research. Though in this particular instance, it's quite intriguing. It involves the participation of stakeholders in society in the research process, not just academics consulting them, asking what they think, but becoming partners with them. And the actions, it first appeared, I've got this marked on your handout here, in the late 1980s and 1990s in Swiss and German context of sustainability research, in no small part supported by the fact that the Swiss National Science Foundation promoted a 10-year program, the Swiss Priority Program Environment, that pumped a lot of money into the study of environmental sustainability collaborative research. So this generated over time a substantial amount of knowledge, case studies, best practices on how to go about doing team science in the sense of science also involving stakeholders in society. And it was framed by a fundamental idea that the problems of the Lebenswelt, the problem in German, the problems of the life world, or as we say in English, the real world, are what drive the need for research. They are what drive the need for doing teamwork together. And it's anchored particularly in the idea of socially robust knowledge. I'll refer to that in a moment. And again, TDNet is the major focus of it. More recently, you see down at the bottom on the far, maybe you can't see from the back row where the far bottom is there, at ANU, the Australian National University, a new movement, Integration and Implementation Sciences, has arisen. It's a deliberate attempt to create a new discipline, a term of some dispute, among those of us who work with that network, that provides knowledge, concepts, and methods for research on complex problems. And their most recent publication, which I've referenced at the end of your handout on the flip side, their most recent publication focuses on dialogue methods, and very much mindful of what Dan was saying about the need for multi-methodological comparison, focusing on how different methods can be used separately and in tandem. There are a lot of other transdisciplinary networks out there. I'm not going to mention them all, though. One that's meeting this May is ATLAS, a group that's focused on complexity and engineering problems, claiming transdisciplinarity again in an effort to create literally a new science, a new way of doing business, if you will. It's interesting to ask an intellectual question, too. Why did this evolve? Well, I go back to 1982. Remember I mentioned that the OECD in 1970 was the first international conference on interdisciplinarity, and that typology of terms, that flotilla of terms we're familiar with, inter, multi, cross, transdisciplinary, really dates from there. That's when it came into wider parlance. But in 1982, the OECD declared that a shift was occurring, that a shift from endogenous interdisciplinarity focused on questions of interest to the university was occurring, and the shift was moving to exogenous interdisciplinarity formulated in the problems of the community, and that was driving new forms of interdisciplinary work. This certainly is echoed in a number of key works that I've shown you here. A lot of you I have already heard. I was at the reception only 30 minutes before I heard someone say mode two. And so when the new production of knowledge was published in 1994, the notion that we were in a new mode of knowledge production based on hybridity, heterogeneity, transdisciplinarity, a new way of thinking about knowledge arose, and that really became fundamental to thinking about new ways of working together and collaborating. And that was ratcheted up. You see the book Rethinking Science, when many of the same folks who put forward new production of knowledge put out a book called Rethinking Science, arguing that science is now also framed by this exogenous shift. And it's very interesting that the traditional way, mode of evaluation, criteria of quality, legitimacy of science were forged by scientifically reliable knowledge. The argument in Rethinking Science is that socially robust knowledge is just as important. Knowledge has to work in the community and have validity within the community. So this has been a benchmark work. A book that I'm very fond of because I was involved in doing the transdisciplinarity, the joint problem solving, when the Swiss National Science Foundation was wrapping up its program, its environment program, we held a conference in Zurich in 2000 to test the waters, see what was happening out there. We were astonished because we had over 800 people from over 50 countries who came. And by that point, whereas originally this idea arose in sustainability circles, environmental research, by 2000 there were case studies being reported in all fields of human interaction with technical and natural systems. So there's been a substantial momentum. Now, I have referenced some of these. Actually, I've referenced, I think, all three of these books at the end of your handout. It's very important to think about what are the lessons we have learned. Substantial literature has been produced. The core values of collaboration in this large body of knowledge that's now emerged with these three books are participation, That is the participation of stakeholders in research. This is a very prominent value, particularly in the variant in Latin America as well. This really extends across not only European partnerships, but North-South partnerships and Latin American partnerships. So governance is a key idea. Access to power, access to knowledge, but also mutual learning, a cornerstone of the new approach. This discourse of transdisciplinary collaboration and integration is mutual learning, that we learn from each other and we bridge different forms of knowledge, so that structures of team science have to account for that. Also, integrating knowledge, and I had alluded earlier to socially robust knowledge. One of the things Helga Novotny, who's been involved in this project, likes to talk about is the importance of people. It puts people in knowledge. So what are the lessons more broadly that have emerged that I think are applicable to our thinking about a research agenda? Well, you've got that on your handout too. I've identified a number, what I think are about four major principles that we can draw for collaboration, team science, and integration of knowledge that occurs within them from this experience, from this very rich and growing body of knowledge. The first is the principle of variance. Dan was alluding to this in part two in talking about the varied conditions, the temporal scales, the conditions. I've certainly identified the focus. Projects differ from theoretical to very pragmatic goals. Programs differ in their goals dramatically, which create different conditions for collaboration and institutional settings. Dan has written on scope and complexity, the different levels and degrees of narrow versus broad, and he was alluding to vertical versus horizontal perspectives. Certainly, the types and degrees of integration, the methods too. There, you were once again talking about a variety of methods. Many and varied methods appear in interdisciplinary and transdisciplinary collaborative projects on a range of qualitative, quantitative. Some are tested, some are emergent, some are well known. Systems theory, modeling, concept mapping, Delphi, scenario building, simulation. Some are focused very much too of necessity, and I think this is an important thing for us to be thinking about here, on communication and common understanding. So there are a number of different uses of mental mapping of stakeholder views. The Danish consensus conferences are a very good example of a form where communication is central to thinking about how the work actually gets done, and the Swiss Publi Forum, where you have forums in the cantons where people come together in collaborative workspaces. And new methods continue to emerge all the time. The ETHOF in Zurich, for instance, the Technological Institute, conceived the notion of TIPS, transdisciplinary integrated planning and synthesis, that embeds scientific knowledge into community projects, and then mutual learning occurs and modifications are made as they go. If you look at the next one, the principle of platforming, I'm reminded in some ways of the important work that Dan and his colleagues, whom he mentioned, did on thinking about what are the antecedent conditions, what are the contextual factors that have to be in place for good inter and transdisciplinary outcomes. There are two of the ideas that are being talked about quite a bit in Europe in transdisciplinary circles these days are the notion of platforms as social networks that create space or trading zones, places where people can come together. Some of you may recognize the notion of trading zones from the earlier STS, before STS became science of team science, science technology studies, and the notion that you can create spaces, both place-based and remote, remote through digital communication, where people can work together, people from different systems, and fostering mutual understanding. Also the notion of, you've got this on here, frameworks, idea think tanks, and there's a lot of discussion lately of the importance of interaction structures. What kinds of structures are set up that enable people to go through mutual learning? The quality of the structure then is directly related to the next point, the final one, the third one rather, the principle of iteration. There's been a lot of talk about how inter and transdisciplinary work get done. And as we think about the dynamics of team science, it's very important for us to think about the piece in the middle there that's so crucial. How do people actually work across different barriers, across different borders, across different trading zones that they create. What actually happens within them? And it's interesting, I've just given you a couple of the descriptions. There have been a variety of descriptions of how that work takes place, that integration occurs through, you know, moving back and forth, bootstrap. Steve Fuller likes to talk about bootstrapping up from lower levels to higher levels. I like to talk about triangulating breadth, depth, and synthesis. But patterning and testing throughout have become primary values. You don't simply say, this is the formula for integration, we're going to follow it, and then we will achieve it. It's sort of nirvana-like state. That's not what happens. Progressive testing, progressive sharing, making adaptations, modifying objectives and goals as feedback comes in, a very important part. But also leveraging expertise by weaving together different perspectives in a balancing act that does entail compromise, that does entail negotiation. So a host of ways of thinking about that. And it's very important to appreciate, too, that social and cognitive integration, something that Dan and his colleagues have also written about, are tightly interwoven in collaboration. Joint definition of everything in a project, role negotiation to see what people need from each other, negotiation of different meanings and power, status. You were referring, Bill, to the importance of looking at differences of place, gender, status, trying to get those negotiated. And that's been very much a part of the governance variant of transdisciplinarity in Latin American, too, as well. The knowledges of indigenous peoples, legitimating the knowledges of community. The knowledge, there's a wonderful expression for it that some researchers have in Ottawa, the knowledge people have of their neighborhoods, what that contributes to a project. And the final, as I'm zapping here to the end of the time allotment, the final notion of this is so fundamental, the principle of communicative rationality. Language and communications lie so much at the heart of what we're talking about. I don't just say that because I'm a humanities professor, but there's been some very rich work on the importance of creating a shared language culture and how directly related that is to the quality of outcomes. And without it, the outcomes will be shortchanged. Bilingualism is a very popular metaphor of interdisciplinary and transdisciplinary work, but it's, I think, quite erroneous. Mastery of two languages rarely, if ever, occurs. And so, again, borrowing from science, technology, studies, the old STS, the notion of pidgins, people develop pidgins, interim tongues they use for communication, and then Creole zones form, new languages, new subgroups that create ways of working together and new ways of understanding each other. And then finally, there are different forms of knowledge are always being bridged. It's not just about bridging disciplines. It's about bridging disciplines and professions. It's about bridging, giving you an example of what at the ATHOF they make a framework for their curriculum, system knowledge, target knowledge, and transformation knowledge. But it's also about not just the kinds of knowledges we bring to the table, but what emerges when people work together. What new forms of knowledge, hybrid forms, a hybrid form of knowledge, the last point there, about making sense together, and that it's intersubjectivity that arises when people share meanings, they negotiate them. So quite a lot to think about there. And I did list at the bottom of your, I did list at the bottom of your page there the URLs. Actually, I'm out of time, so we won't go look at them now. We might look at them later. I don't want to hold Steve up. But what's very exciting to me about this moment is that we're somewhere historically that wasn't completely imagined in 1970 when interdisciplinarity became a new term of common parlance, or it was launched. So it's very important to think about bridging with other networks, other groups that are thinking about similar problems, bringing the ways they think about them, tapping into their knowledge bases as we think about what our own knowledge base is. So, Steve.